We are here with Sarah Ann Williams at MTech Lunar here on the Awesome Cast.
Hello, we are here at MTech Lunar 2019, and happy to welcome Sarah Williams.
Hello.
Sarah, how are you enjoying MTech so far?
Very nice. Very crowded.
Yeah. Apparently they sold out of one-day passes for today, which...
I've been hearing, like, the numbers are really good.
Yeah, so you know, thank you for your hand in that. You know, we...
Nah, good, keep going.
Yeah.
It was all you. It was all you.
Like, yeah.
No.
I mean, come on.
I'm so shallow.
I think Mike and I we've had this discussion, so we're gonna open with this. This is not usually how I open these interviews, but who is best girl in Valkyria Chronicles 4, and why is it Lily?
You are my boyfriend. I'm just like, dude, seriously? He's like, nah, she's like my commander now. Well, she got so good with her.
Yeah, I just finished the game. What was it? Tuesday? Yeah.
I was sort of surprised everyone was, because there's just so many characters. Yeah. So it's hard to be like, it's that feeling of like, wait, people liked her that much? Really? Because she's just so many to choose from.
I think what it is one, we did this on our Twitch stream and played it 4 hours at a time for however many months, two or three. And, you know, we have certain rules for our stream, and one of the rules for Valkyria Chronicles 4 was that we were going to field as many females as humanly possible in our battalion. So, you know, Lily eventually made her way into our battalion and into our hearts because she was like, wow, she is super into this.
It's so funny to me that I just play two flavors of crazy in that game.
Yeah.
It's like, well, do you want the slightly creepy Ringo girl, or do you want the one that's probably going to step on your head?
Yeah.
To take your pick.
Everyone loves it when you step on their head. I mean, it's
weird. I don't know what's going on with that, but all right. So now that I've totally gotten us off on the right track, what have you been working on lately that you can talk about?
It was like NDA.
Yeah.
NDA. What can I actually talk about? I don't know, honestly.
Okay.
I know, something just came out that I was like, hey, I can talk about that. Like, it's always Shadowverse stuff that I'm doing that I'm like, yeah, here's that new card I did. It's hard. There's a lot of stuff I'm doing I just can't talk about yet.
That's totally okay.
Like, there's certain things that I'm already in that I don't even know I can talk about because it's like, I don't know if they know about that update publicly. Is that okay to talk about? You don't know.
Well, that's exciting, though. At least we know we've got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah.
What made you take an interest in acting?
I was an anime nerd.
That's how
I figured out voice acting was a thing, by watching anime. That's why I knew voice actors in the first place, and slowly and surely figured out I could do that as a career. I want to do that as a career. And then snowballed from there.
Fantastic. What got you into anime? What was your entry drug?
Sailor Moon. Second grade.
Like the
deep dub, yes. Sailor Moon. Yes. That little kid running home after school to watch it, and just that inkling that what I was watching was not the same as, you know, like Scooby-Doo and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, something was different about this one that I'd not noticed in other cartoons, and that's the part of why I gravitated towards it. Like, something different, something I've not, something about the mood of it is different. I didn't understand why until I realized this is from a different country. Oh,
right.
What?
And, you know, the tenor of anime, especially like in the mid-90s and stuff, was different from anything that was on, you know, like Nickelodeon or...
It's cool now because now we have so much more choices. Like,
yeah.
Like, not that, like, there's so many classic cartoons that I'm not going to disparage, like, you know, Teenage Mutant Turtles and all that stuff. There's a lexicon for that.
Yeah.
And it's very important, and it's like, that's an important part of everyone's lives and stuff. I think what always, and it's so nice now that American cartoons can take more risks and be and do a lot of stuff that the Japanese cartoons got to do, but we couldn't because, you know, kids, you don't want to go too far. Because I think what always frustrated, like, what started frustrating me as a younger kid watching and why I loved anime more than I liked Western stuff is that there were consequences.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the shows I watched as a kid, there didn't seem to be any staying consequences. Like, oh my gosh, danger's happening. Oh my gosh, okay, the status quo is resumed and we're fine next episode. Like, nothing carried over. And I started noticing, like, in Sailor Moon, like, stuff stuck. Like, oh my gosh, Darien's been kidnapped. He's not just back again. He's not back again for a long time. Oh my gosh, now he's evil. And that's sticking for a long time.
Right.
Like, you know, like, I watched, like, Pirates of Dark Water. Great show. Yeah. Beautiful animation. But that was, like, generally, it's like, adventure happens, danger happens, then everything's generally okay by the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, there was that feeling of consequences. Like, do you know how much it blew my mind when Superman, the cartoon, came around, and they had that whole big showdown with Darkseid, and, like, Superman's, like, chained up, and they're like, he's like, look at your savior, you bow down to me, humanity, because I've got your savior, you're done. And that cop stands up to him, and he's just like, okay, boom, evaporated. Like, he didn't come back. I was like, that guy's dead. This is cartoon in America, he's dead. Like, funeral and everything. I was like, my brain exploded. I was like, they're doing it in cartoons now. We're getting it. Oh my gosh. I mean, exceptions to the rule, like, Batman always was one to take chances. Like, that show was like, no, we're going to be mature for the kids. We're not going to insult their intelligence and stuff, you know? So that and Gargoyles I always loved a lot because they were the shows that were more doing the stuff I liked in anime because they, like, stuff would stick.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that was really, at least for me, interesting about anime as opposed to Western shows at the time was anime had endings. You know, you've got your exceptions, you know, you've got your Dragon Ball, you've got your One Piece that go on and on and on forever and ever. But most of the time, you know, it's like 13, 26 episodes and you're out of there.
Well, back then I think it was more like, they would go like 52 at least, right?
So, like, sometimes, yeah.
It's like, which I just, nobody has patience for anymore for the most part. Unless you split them into cores and then you're like, oh, we can take them in short bursts.
Right. But, you know, I always thought that was like, okay, cool. They're just telling a story, and it's not gonna go on forever and ever. And you know, Shredder's never going to get his comeuppance because if they do, they have to stop making episodes.
Basically, the sadder thing would be also the show would end, but you'd never get closure.
Yeah,
because you know something would happen. It's like, oh, the show's not popular enough anymore. We've got to just stop. The story would just stop. It's like, but. It was sort of like that sad thing that happened with the Thundercats reboot they did. That was looking great and doing stuff, but I had to stop it. And basically, it's like the bad guys won because we didn't make any more. But
okay. So I've got a question. Since you're talking about this, so let's talk about the writing. You know, because that's the storyline. You know, you talk about the writing, the consequences, and such. So, do you think that in this day and age, that the fan base is encouraging and changing the style of writing in some of these shows based upon what you're saying?
I'm just thinking about that. Which worries me to certain extents because I don't think if you're making something that's going to be like, you know, whenever you're a creator, you generally, I think it's better to make it for you. You're the one making it. This is something that's passionate to you. It like nobody likes writing by committee. You know, that thing where you can tell it's just like 20 different people sat in a room and wrote this and there's nothing. It's just a product they shoved out. I think the same danger can happen if you worry too much about what the fans are doing. Because if you're letting the fans write your project, then it's not yours. They came to your project, I feel like, because it had your stamp on it. But then it gets worrisome because fan groups get a little too, and they start yelling at you and just, you know, social media dogpiling you. And then it just gets like, I don't like that. I don't like that aspect. I think there has to be happy balance. Just be like a creator being like, oh, I don't know. Maybe. Of course, also, there's, like, legal things. It's like, don't take you get sued if you take an idea that wasn't yours. It's kind of a weird sort of tumultuous sort of relationship, I think.
Excellent answer. Who would you say has had the biggest impact on your career?
I was a big Crispin Freeman fangirl. Like, I sort of looked up to him a lot because I thought he was, like, one of the best of the best of the best. And I think he's still one of the best. He's amazing. In terms of, like, that was like kids when I was just coming up and deciding to do it. In terms of when I actually started my career, I have to say there was a voice actress named Jeannie Elias who was She did several parts in Naruto, several parts in Bleach. As told by Ginger, she was a little brother. She's kind of like one of the go-to people for boy voices in the business. And I had learned about her from a lady I took classes with in New York, and she took me under my wing, and I did over the phones lessons with her because I still lived in Indiana, so we would do that. And then I came out and met her in person, and she was one of the first people to let me start auditioning because, yeah. And then I met my dialect teacher is Paul St. Peter, who is the Nine Tails in Naruto, and just Xehanort in Kingdom Hearts. Yeah, he's amazing. Like just been great to me. And I just look up to him so much, and just like a dialect wizard. He can listen to you and know exactly where you live, where you came from. Did you switch states at some point in your life? It's like, how do you know these things about me? Whether or not you have weak T's and S's, which apparently I do. So, but yeah, and so awesome.
Cool. So something I'm always curious about, because it's a lot of work to get into that field. It's a very competitive field. What keeps you motivated?
Knowing that I love doing this. It's like you have to want to do this above all else, because there's so many other things I could do that would pay better and have more security and would be easier. I wouldn't have to have like any lot of solid jobs. I could just go and just be like, it's just 9 to 5 and you just take care of that, and then you're good. And I get paid more on a regular basis and not have to worry about, are they ever going to bring me back? And, you know, also job security, as in, like, legal job security, too, because freelancer, they can get rid of you anytime they want.
Right.
But it's like, I know how much I wanted to do this and how much I still love doing it. Because I feel like if there did come a point where it's just like, this isn't worth it anymore, then, yeah, I'd get out of it, because I could go move somewhere else where it's not going to cost me, you know, $800 for a single room with 4 roommates. Like, you have to really want it, because it's also super expensive and it's super heartbreaking sometimes. And it's just, can you play the long game? Do you want to do this even though it could take 20, 30 years to get established?
Right. That's got to be just tough at times.
It's tough. And I think there's a misconception, though, where it's like, I've said that to many panels and many people. It's like, as I've said, it's like, do you want, if you're someone who wants to be a prospective voice actor, I say again, do you have the patience to stick it out? It could take 10 years, 20 years to get anywhere. Some people, I've told a story of a lady in Hollywood who she didn't get a substantial acting gig until she was 50, but she stuck it out and it paid off. But it's like, there's no shame in if you don't want that. Like, this idea of like, oh, I didn't make it, I failed. It's like, you shouldn't shove yourself into this career and make yourself miserable. And then, you know, for the sake of the fact that maybe it's just not for you. It's not failure. It's worse, I think, to stick into this if it's not for you. Because you could be doing something else you could be way better at. And you're missing potential in something you could do, as opposed to, well, but I want to be a voice actor. But what if you're missing your potential to be a writer, or maybe something else entertainment biz related, like, you know, like directing or something? Like I've seen too many cases of people wanting to be voice actors and they're toughing it out, where I'm like, I feel like you're missing a chance to be great somewhere else because you're just determined to not fail in this. Or it's not not any shame if you decide it's not for you, but people take it as failure. If you didn't stick it out, you didn't make it. It's like, it's not failure. It's just realizing this isn't maybe what you want to do with yourself, and it's making you unhappy.
Yeah, there's a really weird fine line between self-awareness and recognizing, you know, you need to make a change somewhere, and failure, because we tend to conflate the two a lot.
I think a lot of, there's other different types of jobs where people just keep shoving themselves into it, and it's like, because I can't fail because I'll be looked down on if I failed. Right. It's like, but again, it's like, what if you're supposed to be somewhere else and you're missing your chance there to be happy doing that and be great at that?
Right.
Because I got to do it because this is what I put everything in. It's like, but no, you could be great somewhere else maybe, and you're just making yourself unhappy.
That's, That's good life advice.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, you started out in Indiana, and clearly you're not there now. I
was there last weekend, actually, for family-related stuff.
Well, I'm partially from Indiana, so I'm like, you can't.
Yeah, born and raised myself.
I live a good chunk of my life in Indianapolis, and so I end up being a Cubs fan just because that's what they were in Chicago. So anyways, what were the more interesting challenges of uprooting your life to pursue this dream? What was the more the...
I think mostly just the homesickness, because I'd never lived away from my family. I'd never lived anywhere but where I grew up until I was like, I'm going to go across the country and try this. And it was hard because I was very, very homesick, and I missed my family, and I didn't know anybody. And it was scary being somewhere where I stopped calling home at one point because all I would do was cry, and I didn't want to make my family listen to me bawl over the phone every time I talked to them. It took a while, but slowly but surely, you know, you gain a family because 99% of my friends are voice actors, but you eventually finally meet people and you sort of establish your own little gathering of these are people I can go to when I need someone and can trust with everything, which I'm lucky. Maybe not everyone gets that, but I feel like generally the VO community I'm in is sort of like you figure out we sort of just all click together and we're all a bunch of nerds for the most part. You'll always find your people somewhere.
Could you give us an example? Since you moved, give us an example of a day in the life.
These days, it depends. I'm still part-time at a side job just because the extra money is nice, and I could quit, but I can still manage it. And again, that extra little paycheck is just a nice little boost. I'm saving as much as I can to finally get my own place because LA is not cheap. But basically these days it's sort of, if I don't have that part-time job, because if I do, it sort of clogs things up. Generally it's just, you know, wake up, work out, which is not something I have to do. I just like to now. It's good for me. And you just do whatever auditions tend to pop in. Like that's your job as a voice actor. It's not so much voice acting as auditioning, because you need to audition to get the jobs. So you just do whatever auditions come in. That could be something like 3 to 5 on average a day. Except for weekends, like they close on Saturday and Sunday. And then if you have actual sessions, you'll go to that, of course, and, you know, kind of generally have to also watch depending how much you're stressing out your throat, because I know I've passed on auditions if I just had a stressful session vocal-wise, or I have something tomorrow and I'm like, I got to save my voice and make sure I'm good because they are paying me to go there, so... It's pretty unpredictable. You never quite know what time you're going to be working when. It's always up in the air. I could be like working 10 a.m. to 12 one day, and then the next day I'm like 4 to 5, and then the next day I'm like 2 to like 6, like for 4 hours. It's all over the place. And some days I have to go out and be like, time to go to convention. Yay! Out of town.
So what has been some of the more interesting vocal directions you've been given to achieve whatever voice they're looking for?
Sort of like, it's generally just run-of-the-mill. I'm just, that, it doesn't, not a lot shocks me anymore, just because there's that thing where you need to go in open-minded and just sort of try to do whatever they want you to do, even if it feels dumb, because it's like, didn't really, they know what they wanted. I mean, I had a session where she's like, I want you to sound real self-satisfied, like you're rubbing your hands together. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, no, literally do it. Like actually do it when you're like, oh, okay. Like, I had to be careful because, you know, clapping at the mic's going to pick that up. So I was like, oh, okay. It's like, you know, that moment where you're like, that feels silly. It's like, no, just do it. They know what they're doing. It's just like, yes, thank you. I was like, okay. Like, sometimes they'll ask you to do stuff. You're just sort of like, at first you're like, you have to remember you're an actor. Your job is to be silly. So just run with it. Everyone's in on the gag.
Can I tackle on your question? Since you already named me, I'm supposed to be the silent partner. I'm going to get a question.
Yeah, go for it.
So you've done a lot of work, both anime and video game. Mm-hmm. So kind of in the similar vein of like asking the booth, what's the difference? What do you have in the difference in headspace of I'm going in to do an anime dub or versus I'm going to go in and record a video game character? Or is there any difference?
I mean, headspace, definitely. I mean, anime-wise, it's more technical. I'm going to have to be matching flap, matching timing, matching picture. So there's more an aspect also of like keeping that extra skill set I have to do of technicality, because you've got to match the picture and stuff. Most games I'm not going to have to worry so much about timing and stuff, so I can just sort of focus on, cool, I have more flexibility for some more acting stuff if I choose, you know, unless it is a game where you have to time stuff. Sometimes that does happen. I mean, also, generally, anime is going to be a straightforward story. Like, you're going from point A to point B, unless there's a reason why we have to jump around. But otherwise, it's like episode 1, episode 2, episode 3, episode 4. Awesome. Games, we tend to jump around sometimes. Like, generally, they like to start on what they call the scenario, which is, like, main story stuff. Like, Valkyria Chronicles, stuff like that would be, like, you know, stuff with cutscenes. The main story. Like, the stuff that you absolutely are always going to see no matter how you play the game. That's the main stuff. You're not going to miss that. And then they generally like to do, sometimes it's like, next we'll do, all right, now we're going to go into all the battle stuff. Like, anything that is uttered in a battle sequence, that will be its own separate thing. You're not going to do that during the scenario event. We'll get it later. And then they'll be like, all right, there's a side event, side quest, stuff that's optional that they might not see if they don't do it. So then we'll do that. And then, you know, it's not generally as straightforward a process. So you're sort of, sometimes you're sort of like, you have to kind of switch around your headspace because it's like, oh man, this character died and now I'm sad and stuff. And then you're suddenly jumping back into a different side scenario where that character is still alive and like, oh, I'm fine again. It's like, so your headspace is running around a bit.
You've mentioned being a nerd multiple times. So what have you been into lately?
Like, just hobby-wise?
Or? Yeah.
I read a lot of fan fiction, just on one particular OTP I have, and I'm not gonna say it. I write it, too, and I don't want people to find my stuff. It's bad. I don't think I'm a very good writer. It's not so much I'm ashamed of it, because I'm pretty vanilla for the most part on what I write. But I don't think it's very good. It's just like, don't read my crappy writing. I'm not good. It's just mostly to blow off steam. Maybe someday I'll write something original, but once I kind of, it's just fun, and also because I do like writing, but I'm not very good at it, and I sort of use it to be like, let's see if I can maybe get some skills better and just get used to not writing a word an hour. No, I have to go back and fix that. God, I gotta stop editing on the fly. I try to play video games because I like playing video games. There's just not a lot of time these days. I have a lot of horror games on deck that I need to do. And me and the boyfriend watch a lot of anime on Fridays because it's sort of a date night thing. And now we just started like I'm educating him because he's a little newer to it all. He's only seen like Madoka and most of the stuff I'm in because he's biased. And Steins Gate. He loves Steins Gate. I'd never seen Steins Gate, but he actually adores Steins Gate. So we actually did sit down and watch that. And I'm trying to, he's sort of like, don't feel bad. You're getting it a lot better than most people do and stuff. It's like, still very, very confusing. There's a lot of physics and stuff I'm not understanding, but I like the concept of it. And that show should just be like, Okabe, you've messed up. Why did you do that, man?
What draws you to fanfic? That's an interesting answer.
I mean, originally, again, it was just this case of I sort of realized I liked writing as a kid. I wrote, back when I wrote anime fanfic, it's not anime fanfiction what I read now, but back when I wrote some Gundam Wing fanfiction, I wrote some Ronin Warriors fanfiction, I did a massive crossover with Ronin Warriors and Sailor Moon, and thank God you really can't find that thing on the net anymore. It's so bad. Oh, if I was bad, if I'm not that great now, I was terrible. I was so purple prosy. It was awful. I look back on it and I'm like, oh, no. What was I thinking? It's not good stuff. But it was fun and I enjoyed it. And I sort of realized coming back to it again, I was like, I sort of miss doing that. And I started it back up because I was having like a bad set of days and I just wanted to distract myself. And it's like, you know what? Let's just write something. Like, let's do this thing that I'm reading a lot of fan fiction for right now. Let's just write my own thing. Maybe it'll just distract me. Like, it's not bad. It's like, I'm way better than I was as a kid, at least. So it's like, there's a plus. So it's like, yeah. I guess I kind of like writing. I was a bookworm as a kid, even as an anime. I think a little before the anime fandom really kicked in, because it didn't really slot in properly until Toonami came around. But I loved Sailor Moon as a kid, but there was that long sequence before Sailor Moon popped on. And I only was eight. It was hard to find anything. I was a kid. I didn't really know where to find stuff. So I was sort of that middling fan. But I was a big bookworm, like that kid who basically the teacher was yelling at because she hadn't put a book away after recess. Like, I read a lot. I sadly don't read as much as I used to, and I should, because I sort of got used to reading manga. And it's like, I need to read stuff with just words.
a question that may, I guess you don't have to answer, but it's going around the, I've noticed going around Twitter lately is a lot of people talking about in fan fiction their favorite shipping dynamics. In terms of what kind of couples you like to see.
Oh, those memes. Those are wonderful. I was like, oh, this is a thing that's happening, and it's great.
I was curious, what is your favorite shipping dynamic?
I was saying to a friend who, because we both had the same OTP, like some of them, I was amused by one that was basically like, these all fit. All of these fit. I'm very fond of sort of like, I like the dynamic of sort of the stoic sort of stiff upper lip sort of type and the more free thinking type that sort of like gets them to sort of like chill out a little bit. You're good. And he's like, no, I can't. I'll be showing feelings. But I like when you show your feelings. Like, you know. I don't know. Like, it depends. Like, I'm not solidly like, it's got to be this. It's like, it's more like, do they have a good connection? Like, the thing that frustrates me a lot about, like, when I see, like, normal stuff, like, because I don't feel like they write a lot of good heterosexual couples. It's not that people don't like them. It's just that they don't write them well. There's, like, you get frustrated. It's like, you put these two together just because they're a guy and a girl. Come on, give me a connection between these guys. Like, what's up with that? Like, I was thinking, like Hitomi and Vaughn, even though they never kiss in Escaflowne, like, there's a beautiful connection. Like, these two, you have no doubt. They care about each other, and you want to see them. It's good. Like, there. That's a good, that's well-written stuff. Good stuff. It's like, I feel like you don't see that enough sometimes. And it's like, I want to see that. I, like, write all your couples, whatever they are, well, and we'll like them. Don't just throw them together because you want them to, you can't see what I'm doing, but it's like, bim, bim, bim.
It's very visual. It can probably be described in emoji, though. So, we might just put that in the description.
Like, I have an eggplant, and I have a... How did I get this monkey? It's an open-mouth monkey. I have the eggplant, and I have the open-mouth monkey. I guess that's the emoji you're supposed to use. I literally just saw someone on Twitter complaining that some guy had sent her an emoji of an eggplant and the monkey with his mouth open. I was like, that's a dumb way to put it. I get the eggplant, but why the monkey? Just because his mouth is open? Come on. Just get the one with the tongue hanging out. That works. Anyway.
Yeah.
So what are your favorite emojis? I'm curious.
That's a great follow-up.
I like to send the one with just the eyebrow lifted like... I like that one. It's fun to use. I have to catch myself a lot when I'm sending texts or... tweets that I just default to that XD thing a lot just because I'm like it's a default for a lot of my emotions.
Favorite GIF?
Or GIF, we're not picky.
I don't know about GIF, but I have a lot of use lately for this Daffy Duck picture that's from I think Duck Amok, where he's just like, because it's just a beautiful example of you what? I love that.
What other visual-based question.
Audio
medium.
That's audio podcast.
What's your favorite gesture?
I also have a great picture of this weird bird that's just going like, such a good thing for just like, I think one of my friends at one point was just like, a bunch of pigeons just pooped on my car, and I sent it to him just like,
I feel the voice really conveys the image without any images.
Well, she's got the biggest. I didn't know bird could make that expression.
All right, I think I'm gonna go ahead and put you out of your misery, and we'll go ahead and let you go. But you have been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me.
But before you go, where can we find you? How can we find the stuff that you do?
It's pretty easy to find me on Twitter. I just don't bother with Facebook that much these days, except for like really close family and friends stuff. And even then, I barely use it. I'm pretty active on Twitter. It's, I think, at Sarah Ann Willia. I couldn't fit the whole Williams on there. It's Sarah with an H and Ann with an E. All one word. It's not too hard to find me. I've got a Jack Frost as my little circle emoji.
Well, don't worry. We'll make sure that the Twitter's in the show notes.
Technology. Yay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my favorite gift. There's a gif, I think it's from a British show. There's a guy, and he's got a sign, and there's a lady walking up to him, and he's just waiting. He goes, technology! It just says technology on it. She's like, in a very British way, she's like, oh, damn.
I thought we were going to do the hot seat question, where it's like one ridiculous question per, like, what's your favorite soda? What's your favorite color?
I mean, we still can. I'm going to do a quick round of hot seat questions. Do I have to not think about it? Out of my mouth?
I'm going to go, right?
I'll try.
Here we go. Favorite fast food?
Wendy's.
Favorite soda?
Diet Dr. Pepper.
Favorite candy?
Twix.
Favorite book you've just read?
Sherlock Holmes.
Favorite movie you've seen past month?
Shazam.
Favorite
swear costume? Word. Swear word.
Can I do that?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Go for it.
Fuck.
Favorite giant robot?
Big O.
Favorite thing that you have done that would be best improved by a giant robot?
Madoka?
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine? I mean, she's already got that giant mermaid form. Like, turn that to a giant robot.
I feel like Monica with giant robots might just be Evangelion.
I have a feeling maybe they just do that. Can you imagine? Would you put it past the writer who did that? What's his name? Gen?
Gen Urobuchi.
Would you put it past him? Maybe just as a fun spin-off? Just be like, let's just do Monica, but this time we'll get him all giant robots.
Like that.
I'm
digging that.
Yeah.
I'm digging
sign
that.
Me up.
It could come. That doesn't
well, he did a giant robot show, didn't he?
Everyone looks at me. I know he's been involved in some for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's written any, just off the top of my head, but.
Any other lightning round? Fast questions?
What do you enjoy about the amazing creature that is Jack Frost?
Hee-haw.
Okay, definitely SMT Jack Frost. Okay.
Everybody good? Any more burning questions?
That was good.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Boy, I hope you sure enjoyed that interview with Sarah Ann Williams. It was really, really great, and thank you for having us, Sarah. It was amazing. You can find this podcast and, you know, everything else we do on The Awesome Cast, osmcast.com. You can find me on Twitter at It's Basil Time, John at J5IsLive, and Kevin at Twitlets_Kevin. And also, we were guest starred with an entirely different Charlie than we usually get, and you can find her at Charlie Kaser, CharlieKaser. Yes. Thank you, Charlie, for giving us that wonderful lightning round. You should totally follow her on Twitter. And Sarah, and me, and Kevin, and John, and everyone in the world except for all the jerks. Those don't need follows.